Okay, turn to Proverbs 11:29. I'm going to cover one verse again tonight. It says, "He that troubleth his own house shall inherit the wind, and the fool shall be servant to the wise of heart." So let's take that first half. He that troubleth his own house shall inherit the wind. I'll define the terms first of all. To trouble is to disturb, agitate, or ruffle water or air, etc. It's secondarily to disturb, derange, to interfere with, interrupt, to hinder, mar. It's also, and this would be a different definition, like this is under Roman numeral 2, so a different class of definition, to put into a state of mental agitation or disquiet, to disturb, distress, grieve, perplex. Also to do harm to injure, to molest, oppress. And if I remember, I will call your attention to that definition there where it says to grieve. I will show you an example of a man who troubled his house, and it says that his parents were grieved at what he did. Then a house is a building for human habitation, especially a building that is ordinary, is the ordinary dwelling place of a family. So that's talking about the domicile where people live. But as it's used in this verse, troubling your own house isn't referring to troubling the four walls that are around you, obviously, but the people that live in the house. It refers to the persons living in one dwelling, the inmates of a house collectively, a household family. I'm sure a lot of probably mothers would agree with that, inmates of a house, when they consider like themselves as wardens, dealing with inmates. But anyway, and then it says, "He that troubleth his own house shall inherit the wind." To inherit is to make heir, put in possession, cause to inherit, literally or figuratively. It's also to take or receive property, especially real property, or a right, privilege, rank, or title as the heir of the former possessor, usually an ancestor, at his decease, to get, to come into possession of by legal descent or succession. And it also means to come into possession of as one's right or divinely assigned portion, to receive, obtain, have, or hold as one's portion. And then it says of that definition chiefly in biblical and derived uses. And then lastly, he will inherit the wind, he that troubles his own house. Wind, now when we're talking about it in a figurative context, which is how it's spoken of here, you're not going to literally inherit the wind, right? But figuratively, it refers to, or it means, applied to something vain or empty, vain, trifling, or unsubstantial. So in other words, if we put the definitions in, a man that disturbs, distresses, disrupts, grieves, harms, hurts, injures, or oppresses his own family should receive nothing for his inheritance. And I'm going to spend most of the study today talking about a whole bunch of different things that would be under that category of troubling one's own house, for which someone should be disinherited. Sadly, a lot of times people aren't, and parents just leave everything equally to all of their children, even though some of them are total wretches. But anyway, that's what I'm going to be talking about tonight. It is normal and good for parents to leave an inheritance to their children. That's how things are supposed to work, unless you are some follower of Karl Marx and his Communist Manifesto, which doesn't believe that there should be any inheritance, that wealth should not be passed down through families. There should be no private property for that matter, so there would be no wealth to be transferred to your children if you're a communist like Marx was. But anyway, in Proverbs 19 and verse 14, it says, "House and riches are the inheritance of fathers, and a prudent wife is from the Lord." So the inheritance of fathers, meaning these are what come from fathers. The phrase there, of fathers, is explained by the rest of the verse. A prudent wife is from the Lord. So house and riches are the inheritance from fathers, right? Of or from can refer to the same thing. So that's the normal thing. Parents leave an inheritance of wealth, money, houses, things like that to their children. And this is what Paul said ought to happen. Shouldn't be the other way around. children shouldn't be, and unless there's extenuating circumstances, children should not be laying up for their parents to take care of them. Parents should be laying up to leave an inheritance to their children. 2 Corinthians 12:14, it says, "Behold, the third time I am ready to come to you, and I will not be burdensome to you, for I seek not yours, but you. For the children ought not to lay up for the parents, but the parents for the children." Now, Paul's referring to himself here in a spiritual relationship with these people, that he was their father in the gospel. But he's going back to a principle to make this spiritual illustration that parents ought to lay up for the children, not children for the parents. Now, there are cultures out there that have that completely backwards, like the one my wife's from. In that culture, parents have children so that as soon as the children get out of the house, then the parents can just sit on Easy Street for the rest of their lives and the children can take care of them, which is not at all what the Bible teaches.
That's why the country is poor.
Yeah, exactly. That's why they're poor. One of the reasons why they're poor, because the kids never get a chance to go out there and build wealth because they're too busy taking care of their parents as soon as they reach teenagerhood. So, anyway. Proverbs 13:22 even goes so far as to say that a good man would leave an inheritance not only to his children, but to his grandchildren. Proverbs 13 and verse 22. "A good man leaveth an inheritance to his children's children, and the wealth of the sinner is laid up for the just." Now, when I say that, I'm not, of course, opposed to children taking care of their parents in their elderly years if they need it, right? But parents and people in general shouldn't be planning on living off your children. You should plan to save and live off yourself and leave your children an inheritance instead of leaving them a burden and a debt. That's not the way it's supposed to work. However, even though it is the normal thing that children receive inheritance from their parents, an inheritance is a blessing. It's not a right. Right? Children don't have a right to an inheritance. As a matter of fact, we don't have a right to anything, actually. You have a right, I've talked about this before, you have negative rights. You have a right to not be murdered, to not be robbed, to not be defrauded. But nobody has any right to anything. You don't have a right to food. You don't have a right to health care. You don't have a right to a house. You don't have a right to anything that you didn't work for. The only thing you have a right for is what you worked for, and somebody owes you because you worked for it. You have a right to absolutely nothing else. I shouldn't say that. When you're an adult. When you're a child, you have a right to food and all that because your parents are under obligation to take care of you. When you become an adult, you have no rights whatsoever. The only right you have, like I said, is what you've worked for. Now, what does this mean to inherit the wind? It says that he that troubleth his own house shall inherit the wind. Well, we can just do a little comparative reading here and see that that refers to having nothing. Ecclesiastes 5:15 through 16. Ecclesiastes 5:15 through 16. It says, "As he came forth of his mother's womb, naked shall he return to go as he came, and shall take nothing of his labor which he may carry away in his hand. And this also is a sore evil, that in all points as he came, so shall he go. And what profit hath he that hath labored for the wind?" You see, so what Solomon's getting at here is this is a different context slightly, but he's labored for the wind because he can't take it with him. So in other words, you've labored your whole life and then you die and you don't own any of the things that you just worked for. So you essentially just labored for the wind. But I've said this before, I would rather die with $1 million in my bank account than owing one person one penny when I die. I'd rather have it all laid up and never got to enjoy any of it than have me be a burden on anybody when I get old. But anyway, you see the point there, though. He's labored for the wind means he doesn't have anything. He's got nothing in his hand, right? Hosea 8 and verse 7. Hosea 8 and verse 7. Likewise, uses somewhat similar terminology here. Hosea 8:7. "For they have sown the wind, they shall reap the whirlwind, and they shall reap the whirlwind. So the idea is, you know, you've sown the wind, you've spent your time doing nothing that's profitable, and you're going to receive nothing that's profitable, except it's going to be a whirlwind, so it's actually going to be a destructive thing. So it's going to be, you're going to receive less than nothing, actually, because it'll harm you. So a man who troubles his own house does not deserve and should not be given an inheritance. He deserves to inherit nothing. And I will give you a bunch of examples now of troubling one's house. And all of these things, and some of these, it's interesting. I didn't really notice this until I started looking at it. These verses, though they're not speaking specifically of an inheritance, they actually do teach that the person that does these things should get no inheritance and will get no inheritance. And I will show you what I mean by that. You're gonna see it here in a minute. This is really interesting, at least I think so. So first way you can trouble your own house and you should receive no inheritance is by disrespecting your parents. Mark 7 and verse 10. And I'm going to show you here that somebody that disrespects his parents should get no inheritance. And under the Old Testament, he would get no inheritance. And you think, I don't remember that law. I'll read it to you here. Mark 7 and verse 10. For Moses said, honor thy father and thy mother, and whoso curseth father or mother, let him die the death. Do dead kids get any inheritance? No, because they're dead. Right? So this verse is teaching that if you trouble your own parents by cursing them, you don't get an inheritance. You get a dirt nap inheritance. I got another one for you. Romans 1 and verse 30. Romans 1, 30. He's listing off all these things that people do that have been given over to a reprobate mind. And in verse 30, he says, backbiters, haters of God, despiteful, proud, boasters, inventors of evil things, disobedient to parents. And you know what happens to people, what people that are worthy of, who are disobedient to parents? Verse 32, who knowing the judgment of God, that they which commit such things are worthy of death, not only do the same, but have pleasure in them that do them. People that are disobedient to parents are worthy of death, the Bible says. And you don't get an inheritance when you're dead. So, if I had children, and they were disrespectful to me, and I'm not talking about teenagers that mouth off once in a while and need to get slapped. I'm talking about you have adult children that are just disrespectful to you out of the will. No inheritance for children that are disrespectful. The next one would be, to trouble your own house would be causing strife among family members. This would be another way to trouble one's house. Mm-hmm. Proverbs 22 and verse 10. I think this would be an important sermon for children to listen to, young adults or old adults, both. For parents that would leave an inheritance and for people that are in the position to get an inheritance, you ought to take heed to this, because parents ought not to leave an inheritance to people that do these things, and people that want to get an inheritance better not do these things, at least not if you're my kid. Proverbs 22 and verse 10. It says, cast out the scorner, and contention shall go out, yea, strife and reproach shall cease. So if you have a child that is a scorner that is causing strife and reproach, he's supposed to be cast out. You cast him out, and then you have peace. Well, do you leave an inheritance to somebody you cast out of your house? I wouldn't. Right? So those who cause strife among family shouldn't get an inheritance. The third thing would be being a fool and making stupid decisions. Proverbs 17 and verse 25. Here's another way you can trouble your own house. And I'll show you this. Any parent that has begotten a fool knows this, that it's a grief, it's a sorrow to have a foolish child that makes foolish and stupid decisions. Proverbs 17 and verse 25. It says, a foolish son is a grief to his father and bitterness to her that bare him. You remember what the definition of trouble was? One of the definitions? To grieve, right? So this is saying right here that this, a foolish son, troubles his father, troubles his own house. Of course, foolish is, I think I even have the definition of fool later on, one deficient in judgment or sense, one who acts or behaves stupidly, a silly person, a simpleton, one who makes bad decisions, in other words, the opposite of a wise person. So if you have a child that continuously makes stupid decisions, I wouldn't leave him an inheritance. Why would you? If he makes dumb decisions and his life's screwed up, giving him money is going to make things worse, not better. I'm not going to waste my money on something like that. Proverbs 10 and verse 1. The Proverbs of Solomon. A wise son maketh a glad father, but a foolish son is the heaviness of his mother, troubles his mother. Been many a mother that is laid awake at night worrying about their foolish children and what they're doing. Proverbs 19 and verse 13. A foolish son is the calamity of his father, and the contentions of a wife are a continual dropping. Calamity, that's some severe trouble, isn't it? I don't think it would be a bad idea for parents, especially if you had wayward children, just to say, look, if you keep acting like this, you're not getting any inheritance. And just tell them. I mean, and maybe that would be enough. Maybe if they're greedy and covetous, that would give them an incentive anyway to behave themselves. Just say, hey, your brother's getting it all, or your sister's getting it all. You're not getting anything unless you shape up. I
wouldn't hurt anything.
It certainly wouldn't, no.
But Pastor Renner, what would you say about the prodigal son's father who gave him his inheritance despite of the prodigal son displaying foolishness?
Well, he gave his son the inheritance before he displayed foolishness. He gave him his inheritance, and then he went off and squandered it. Now, maybe
you don't, but perhaps, I mean, he just didn't become foolish right after he got his money.
Well, it doesn't say. It's possible that the father could have seen foolish tendencies in him and gave him his inheritance anyway.
Okay.
It wasn't a wise move if that was the case, but.
They're not as bad as this one.
Yeah, I mean, he obviously didn't. It's not recorded that his son acted before he got the inheritance the way that he acted after it. But if I was the father, I certainly wouldn't give a large inheritance to a young kid to go off and do his own thing. But anyway, whatever.
Thank you. That was a very good point.
Yeah. Proverbs 17 and verse 21 says, he that begetteth a fool doeth it to his sorrow, and the father of a fool hath no joy. Okay, so that's the third thing, being stupid and making foolish decisions. Number four, and this is actually one that the Bible gives, is marrying outside of the faith. Genesis 26, 34 through 35. Now, I would qualify this that, number one, if my child wasn't in the faith, and marrying out of the faith wouldn't even matter. And secondly, if my child was in the faith and he married or she married somebody who was not opposed to the faith, maybe came to church with them or it didn't openly oppose them and that kind of thing, I don't recommend it. I don't think it's a good idea. I wouldn't be happy about it, but I wouldn't disinherit a child like that. But if I had a child that went out and married a pagan and somebody in some completely false religion, and then, yeah, that would be troubling to me, and I'm thinking I would be rewriting my will at that point.
Perhaps?
Yeah, an atheist or some false religion or something that would not make me happy at all. Genesis 26, 34 through 35. It says, but Esau was 40 years old when he took to wife Judith, the daughter of Beeri, the Hittite. See, the Hittite is one of those Canaanite nations, the ones that Israel was forbidden to marry. They were not allowed to marry. They were allowed to marry other people from other different lands, but the Canaanites, those pagan, wicked Canaanites, they were not allowed to marry. They were forbidden. Of course, this is before that. That law was given later on in the law of Moses. But anyway. And Bashemath, the daughter of Elon, the Hittite, which were a grief of mind unto Isaac and Rebekah. Remember what trouble means? Grief, right? To grieve. So when Esau married these two Hittites, it grieved, it troubled his parents. He was literally troubling his own house. That's why I say somebody like that doesn't deserve an inheritance. Genesis 27 and verse 46, which is interesting if you know the history of Esau, you know that he didn't get an inheritance. It wasn't because of that per se, but it worked out as such that he did not get an inheritance. Genesis 27 and verse 46. Now, there's three places here which say that this grieved his parents, so you know it really did. And Rebekah said, this is Genesis 27:46, and Rebekah said to Isaac, I am weary of my life because of the daughters of Heth. If Jacob take a wife of the daughters of Heth, such as these, which are of the daughters of the land, what good shall my life do me? I mean, she's just about ready just to do herself in here. She's just so distraught that Esau married these women, these Hittites, the daughters of Heth. And she says, if Jacob does it, I can't take it. That would just be too much for me. And then look over in the next chapter in Genesis 28 and verse 8. And Esau, seeing that the daughters of Canaan pleased not Isaac, his father, then he goes and he marries one of his cousins, the daughter of Ishmael, or one of the daughters or granddaughters or something of Ishmael there in the next verse. So, anyway, but he saw that it pleased not his parents or his father. So he had troubled his own house by doing that. And this was a family tradition. Esau should have known this because when Abraham was looking for a wife for Esau's dad, Isaac, before Esau was around, obviously, Abraham told the servant, don't get one of these Canaanites here. Go back to my home country and get somebody else. I don't want one of these pagans. I don't want my son marrying one of these. Genesis 24 and verse 3, and I will make thee swear by the Lord, the God of heaven and the God of the earth, that thou shalt not take a wife unto my son of the daughters of the Canaanites among whom I dwell. So yeah, if I had children, I'd probably tell them, if you marry a Canaanite, no inheritance for you. Don't be marrying any Canaanites, spiritually speaking. The fifth thing that a person can do to trouble his own house would be living a sinful life, such as living in fornication or adultery, drunkenness, drug use, blasphemy, things like that. And I actually have verses here which will substantiate not giving an inheritance to a fornicator or an adulterer or a drunk or a blasphemer. This is pretty interesting. Let's look at Proverbs 5, 8 through 10. Now, admittedly, I might be stretching just a little bit here to make the point, but I think you'll see the point. Proverbs 5, 8 through 10. It says, remove thy way far from her. This is talking about the strange woman. Remove thy way far from her, and come not nigh the door of her house, lest thou give thine honor unto others, and thy years unto the cruel, lest strangers be filled with thy wealth, and thy labors be in the house of a stranger. Now, the way that I have always thought of that verse, and I think this is probably the closest, you know, application here, is that if you go after the strange woman, you end up, your wealth will be in the house of a stranger through alimony or child support or things like that. But think about it in the sense of an inheritance, and your parents say, you know what, you committed adultery with that strange woman, you're not getting an inheritance, and guess what, your wealth is in the house of a stranger. Might even be in the house of a servant, because the Bible talks about a servant getting the inheritance of a son who causes shame. So you see what I'm saying there? I mean, I think it fits pretty well, actually. Proverbs 6 and verse 26, for by means of a whorish woman a man is brought to a piece of bread, and the adulteress will hunt for the precious life. Not only will you lose your wealth because of alimony and things like that, but you will also lose the wealth that would be coming to you through your inheritance. At least if you're my son, you would. You go after a strange woman, you commit adultery, you fornicate, live with your girlfriend, you are out of the will. And I would make no bones about it. You are out. Deuteronomy 21:18 through 21. How about drunks? If I had a son that was a drunk, out of the will. Deuteronomy 21, 18 through 21. If a man have a stubborn and rebellious son, which will not obey the voice of his father and the voice of his mother, and that when they have chastened him will not hearken unto them, then shall his father and his mother lay hold on him and bring him out unto the elders of his city and unto the gates of his place, and they shall say unto the elders of his city, this our son is stubborn and rebellious and will not obey our voice. He is a glutton and a drunkard. And all the men of the city shall stone him with stones that he die. So shalt thou put evil away from among you, and all Israel shall hear and fear. Is that boy getting an inheritance? Nope. He's dead. Because he was a drunk and a glutton and a stubborn and a rebellious son. How about Proverbs 23 and verse 21? But parents do that kind of thing all the time. Leave money to a kid who's a drunk. What's he going to do with it? He's going to go drink it away and waste it. Not if he's my kid. Proverbs 23 and verse 21. For the drunkard and the glutton shall come to poverty, and drowsiness shall clothe a man with rags. Come to poverty, and he's going to stay in poverty. If I had anything to do with it, until he comes to himself like the prodigal son did. And then how about blasphemy? Leviticus 24, 10 through 16. Leviticus 24, 10 through 16. And the son of an Israelitish woman whose father was an Egyptian. I want you to notice how this ties back into a previous point. Remember what happens when you marry a Canaanite? Bad news. Watch what happens here. Here's a woman. She's an Israelite. Father's an Egyptian, some pagan, whose father was an Egyptian, went out among the children of Israel, and his son and this son of the Israelitish woman and a man of Israel strove together in the camp. And the Israelitish woman's son blasphemed the name of the Lord and cursed. And they brought him unto Moses, and his mother's name was Shelomith, the daughter of Dibri, of the tribe of Dan. And they put him in ward, that the mind of the Lord might be showed them. And the Lord spake unto Moses, saying, bring forth him that hath cursed without the camp, and let all that heard him lay their hands upon his head, and let all the congregation stone him. And thou shalt speak unto the children of Israel, saying, whosoever curseth his God shall bear his sin. And he that blasphemeth the name of the Lord, he shall surely be put to death. And all the congregation shall certainly stone him, as well the stranger as he that is born in the land, when he blasphemeth the name of the Lord, shall be put to death. So, if you had a son who's a blasphemer, likes to use the Lord's name in vain, likes to speak wicked things against God, out of the will. This boy certainly was out of the will. And then here's another way that you could trouble your house. Is by being cruel, violent, deceitful, or otherwise wicked and bringing reproach on the family name. And this is what happened to Jacob with a couple of his sons. Genesis 34 and verse 30. Genesis 34 and verse 30. You remember what happened here? This is Simeon and Levi. And there was a man named Shechem, and he took a liking to their sister Dinah, and he went and fornicated with her. And when they found out about it, they were really angry. And so they, through trickery, they got the Shechemites, to the family of Shechem, to circumcise themselves and become Jews. And while they were sore, then they went in and they killed them all. And Jacob was not happy about this. And he said here in verse 30, and Jacob said to Simeon and Levi, ye have troubled me. See, they troubled their own house. Ye have troubled me to make me to stink among the inhabitants of the land, among the Canaanites and the Perizzites, and I being few in number, they shall gather themselves together against me and slay me, and I shall be destroyed, I and my house. Now, he didn't exactly disinherit them, I don't think, but he cursed them right before he died, along with their brother Reuben. So I don't know what kind of inheritance they got, but they certainly didn't receive a blessing when their father was on his deathbed, that's for sure. Then the seventh thing that you could do to trouble your house would be willfully breaking God's commandments and bringing God's judgment upon the family, like a man named Achan did in the book of Joshua. Now, Achan didn't receive an inheritance either. Joshua 7:24. Joshua 7:24. You remember what happened with Achan? They went to war against Ai, and they were told not to take any of the spoil. And Achan saw this Babylonian garment, he saw a wedge of gold, and he saw, I forget what else was the, some changes of
silver.
Took it, figured nobody'd find out, went back to his tent, buried it there. Mm-hmm. The Lord, when they went to go to war against Ai, then they got the suit beat out of him, and Joshua was wondering, what's happening here? Why are we not... Why is the Lord against us now? And the Lord said, Israel hath sinned. And they started separating out the tribes, and they you know, basically narrowed it down to the tribe and then the family, and then it was Achan, and they went in and he fessed up to it. And he was said to have troubled Israel, and he was put to death for it. Joshua 7:24-25. And Joshua called all Israel with him and took, and Joshua and all Israel with him took Achan, the son of Zerah, and the silver, and the garment, and the wedge of gold, and his sons, and his daughters, and his oxen, and his asses, and his sheep, and his tent, and all that he had, and they brought them unto the valley of Achor. And Joshua said, Why hast thou troubled us? He troubled his own house. The Lord shall trouble thee this day. And all Israel stoned him with stones, and burned them with fire, after they had stoned them with stones. It wasn't just Achan, it was his whole family was stoned. So they lost their inheritance in the land of Israel.
Even the animals.
Even the animals.
Good chance the family was also wicked. It wouldn't surprise me, but the poor animals were just collateral damage.
Yep.
Yep.
It happens sometimes. Another way that you can trouble your house is by being covetous. So getting back to the previous point, if I had a child that willfully broke one of God's commandments and brought judgment upon the family, I'm going to be rewriting the will.
You're not going to have him be stoned to death.
Well, you can't do that today. But, well, I guess it depends on what commandments he willfully broke. I mean, thou shalt not murder or something like that would be a different story. But Habakkuk 2:9-10. Being covetous would be the eighth thing that you can do to trouble your own house. This is referring here to Babylon, referring to him as a man here. And it says there in 9:10, Habakkuk 2:9-10, Woe to him that coveteth an evil covetousness to his house, that he may set his nest on high, that he may be delivered from the power of evil. Thou hast consulted shame to thy house by cutting off many people and hast sinned against thy soul. So Babylon was covetous and therefore cut off people and destroyed nations to get their wealth. And he had brought evil to his house. An individual could do the same thing, obviously. Here's another one which is similar to being covetous, is being greedy. Somebody that's greedy troubles their house. Proverbs 15:27. I knew a guy that when his father died, he just assumed that his father's business and all of his father's wealth would just be automatically given to him and not his father's widow that was left behind. Like, she'd just have nothing because she also helped to build this business and run it for all these years. He just assumed it would all be given to him, and when it wasn't all given to him, he just disowned her. It would have nothing to do with her. And he lost his inheritance because he would have been in the will along with the other children. I personally know of this situation, but anyway, he was greedy. Mm-hmm. And the funny thing is, and this is a lot of times the case, some poor people are greedy too, but a lot of people with money are greedy. That you have, I mean, this guy had plenty of money, and but it's never enough. Hell and death are never full. The eyes of man are never satisfied. Proverbs 15 and verse 27. It says, better is a dinner of herbs where... No, that's not... Let's see, 15... What did I say? 27. 15, 27. He that is greedy of gain troubleth his own house, but he that hateth gifts shall live. So there, that one's pretty straightforward. Greedy of gain, you trouble your own house. And what do you deserve when you trouble your own house? To inherit the wind. So if I had a child that was greedy and I could see that, no, you're not getting any money from me. And how about this one? Going into excessive debt, especially to the point of endangering one's own family and needing financial help from extended family. Now I got a verse for you. Matthew 18, 23 through 25. This would be troubling your own house. The man that does this would trouble his immediate house, like his own wife and children. I'm talking like excessive debt. Right, because if you to the point where your family's in danger of you might lose your house or your whatever, you're not going to be able to provide. But not only that, you trouble your extended house, your extended family, because then they have to come in and bail you out, right? So you're troubling them as well. Matthew 18, 23 through 25. This is in a parable that the Lord taught here. And he says there in Matthew 18:23, therefore is the kingdom of heaven likened unto a certain king which would take account of his servants. And when he had begun to reckon, one was brought unto him which owed him 10,000 talents. This is massive debt that this guy can't pay. But for as much as he had not to pay, his Lord commanded him to be sold, and his wife and his children and all that he had, and payment to be made. That's what I call troubling your house. If you get into that kind of debt and you have to be sold into slavery and your family to pay off the debt, and that's what happened in those days, you've troubled your own house. So if I had a child that got into that kind of debt and needed to be bailed out by the family outside the family, you're not getting an inheritance from me, because you have shown me that you are not responsible with money. And I'm not wasting my money on something like that, I can tell you that much. The next one would be similar to that, being a fool with money. Proverbs 21 and verse 20. So in this category here, this is not only... See, some of the other categories were just sin. It's like I'm not going to give an inheritance to somebody who's in gross sin. This one is sin, and it's just foolishness with money, and why would I give money to somebody who can't handle money? That's a double reason for no inheritance in my book. Proverbs 21 and verse 20 says, there is treasure to be desired in dwelling, and oil in the dwelling of the wise, but a foolish man spendeth it up. The foolish man who can't make good decisions, who's terrible with his money, he can't manage it at all. He spends it up, he's got nothing. If you can't save your own money, you're not going to save mine. I'm not going to give money to somebody who can't save money. You blow your own money, you ain't getting mine to blow it too.
But Pastor Wagner, would you give your son a chance to reform his ways? Let's just say he is maybe 20, 21, and he's not being wise with his money. Would you give him a chance to reform his ways?
Yeah. I mean, yeah, a young kid like that. I mean, I'd warn him, like, look, you don't straighten up, you're out of the will. And I was just thinking about this the other day. If I had a son that went off and was a fool early on in life, I'd give him one chance. You go off and do the prodigal son thing and get yourself so broke that you can't even find anything to eat, I'll buy you a plane ticket or a bus ticket. You can come back home. You can live with me, but my rules under my roof, my rules. You're going to live under my rules. You're going to save money. Mm-hmm. You're going to come to church. You're going to save money. You're going to get back on your feet. Mm-hmm. You're going to show me your budget. And you're going to become financially responsible, or you're out and you're never coming back. And I will not bail you out again. Okay. That's what I would do. Give them one chance, but no more. So if you have a child who's demonstrated that he cannot manage money well and is not a good steward of it, then a parent would be a fool to leave him an inheritance. I've got a verse for you, Luke 16, 10 through 12. Luke 16, 10 through 12. It says, "He that is faithful in that which is least is faithful also in much. And he that is unjust in the least is unjust also in much. If therefore ye have not been faithful in the unrighteous mammon, who will commit to your trust the true riches?" If I had a son, and he can't be faithful in the little that he has right now, do you think I would leave him a big inheritance that I know, according to this verse, he is not going to be faithful with? If you're not faithful with the little bit you have, you will not be faithful with more. You'd be crazy to do that. I was just thinking about something. Do you want to know how you can know if somebody could manage a $100,000 inheritance? You know how you can know if they can manage a $100,000 inheritance?
Give them 100.
Exactly. I don't know how you knew I was going to say that. What do they do with 100? Give them 100. If that 100 is gone as soon as you give it to them, you know what they do with 100,000? The same thing. You give them 100 bucks and they give the Lord 10 of it, and they save most of the rest of it and spend a little bit on themselves, enjoying themselves, what are they going to do with 100,000? They're going to give it the Lord 10,000. They're going to save 70,000 of it, and they're going to take 20,000 maybe and enjoy themselves or whatever, right? Yeah. So you want to know what they'll do with a big amount of money? The same thing they do with a small amount of money, just on a larger scale. Doing so, giving a child an inheritance when he showed himself that he cannot manage the money that he has, would be cause for further grief for a parent, knowing that their hard-earned money will be squandered and wasted by their foolish child. Ecclesiastes 2, 18 through 20. I can't believe you guys guessed what I was going to say. That's amazing. Wow. I guess so. Yeah. Yeah. Yep, 1 foot in the grave and the other on a banana peel, like my dad said. Ecclesiastes 2. And I thought I had come up with something original there, and you guessed it right away.
Oh, so. You really?
I've never heard anybody else say it, yeah. Ecclesiastes 2, 18 through 21. "Yea, I hated all my labor which I had taken under the sun, because I should leave it unto the man that shall be after me. And who knoweth whether he shall be a wise man or a fool? Yet shall he have rule over all my labor wherein I have labored, and wherein I have showed myself wise under the sun. This is also vanity. Therefore I went about to cause my heart to despair of all the labor which I took under the sun. For there is a man whose labor is in wisdom and in knowledge and in equity. Yet to a man that hath not labored therein shall he leave it for his portion. This is also vanity and a great evil." So if you did that, it's bad enough to leave your inheritance to a son that you think that has shown himself wise and you think he'd do well, and then he doesn't really appreciate it and he probably spends it differently than you would have. And that would be frustrating enough. But it would be doubly frustrating if you were dumb enough to give a son who you know can't manage money and you give him a big inheritance just to know it's going to be squandered. So yeah, being a fool with money. That's why I told Braden when he said that he was going to spend all his money on fireworks. I said, "You're not going to get an inheritance, Braden." But he's still young enough. He'll figure it out. He'll figure it out when he gets a little older. So. Right. All right, the next one, this would be the last one, number 12, would be being a bum and not working or not working enough. If you think I am going to leave a son an inheritance who will not work, you are out of your mind. Second, and anybody that does so is out of your mind. 2 Thessalonians 3:10. 2 Thessalonians 3:10. For even when we were with you, this we commanded, that if any would not work, neither should he eat. You know, the people that won't work need to be taught a lesson. They don't need to be given a big old, you know, inheritance so they can not work for a bunch more years. They need to be taught a lesson. Now, this, some people might think, well, this is wrong and this is mean. But I got a Bible verse for you. If a man is lazy, his inheritance should be given to his sibling or someone else who's worked hard and acquired much. And you're like, well, why would you give an inheritance to somebody who already has a lot? Well, go talk to God about it, because that's what God said. Matthew 25:26-29. I can tell you one reason. I mean, if I had two sons and one was a bum that wouldn't work and blew whatever little money that he had, and I had another son that worked very diligently and worked hard and saved money and had a pile of money saved up, if I leave my inheritance to the son that's got it together and got a pile of money saved up, I know my money's not going to be wasted. I know that much, at least. Matthew 25:26-29. This is in that parable of the talents. And the one guy got five, the one guy got two, the one guy got one, and the guy that got one didn't do anything with it, just hid it, and then gave it back to his Lord. And the real reason was the Lord cut right through all the BS and found out that the guy was lazy. And he takes the talent from him and he actually gives it to the guy that has 10. Matthew 25:26-29. His Lord answered and said unto him, thou wicked and slothful, that means lazy, thou wicked and slothful servant, thou knewest that I reap where I sowed not and gather where I have not strawed. Thou oughtest therefore to have put my money to the exchangers, and then at my coming I should have received mine own with usury. Take therefore the talent from him and give it unto him that hath 10 talents. Now most people would say, well, you ought to give it to the guy with 5 talents. Or 4 talents. Well, you had 2 and you made 2, right? So 4. You got to give it to the guy with 4 talents because he's got, you know, like 40% of the guy with the 10 talents. Why would you give it to the guy with the 10? Well, like I said, take it up with God. God says, you know, the guy with the 10? Well, he was wise with what he had. Mm. And give it to him.
In this case, it wasn't really to benefit the servants in the end. It was to make money for their Lord, so he's going to want the guy working with him
right
to show the best output,
yes,
best return, I mean.
Yes, exactly. In the similar parable in Luke 19:24-26, similar, it was, in this case, each one was given one pound, and the man with the one guy made 10 pounds, the other guy made 5 pounds, the other guy squandered it, hid it in the earth, didn't do anything with it. And here's what the Lord said. Luke 19:24-26. And he said unto them that stood by, take from him the pound and give it unto him that hath 10 pounds. And they think like most people think. See what it says there in parentheses? And they said unto him, Lord, he hath 10 pounds. They're thinking, well, that's not right. I mean, he's already got 10. Why don't you give it to the other guy? He has only got 5, right? For I say unto you that unto every one which hath shall be given, and from him that hath not, even that he hath shall be taken away from him. So, yeah, if I had one child, more than one child, and one of them was a bum, and the other one was diligent and had done well for himself, I'd leave the inheritance to him. Unless the other one straightened his act out. The wealth that would have gone to the sinner should be laid up for the just. Proverbs 13:22. Proverbs 13:22. A good man leaveth it in inheritance to his children's children, and the wealth of the sinner is laid up for the just. I never thought about this looking at this verse. But it's interesting that he leaves an inheritance to his children's children, to his grandchildren. Could it possibly be that the sinner, and maybe not, but could it be that the sinner was one of his own children that didn't get the inheritance and he leaves it to the grandchildren instead because they are just? I don't know, but anyway, just a thought that just crossed my mind. So a man who does any of these things, any of those 12 things, I don't have enough fingers, I was going to hold up 12, but anyway, a man that does any of those 12 things should get no inheritance. Parents should not feel guilty about cutting such a son or a daughter out of their will. And I had an uncle that should have been cut out of the will. That guy disrespected his mother, caused grief and trouble to his mother for most of his life, disrespected her while she was alive, disrespected her after she died, publicly, at that point, I mean, the will's already done, I mean, there's nothing they could do about it, but that man should have received, he should have inherited the wind. He shouldn't have got anything. If I was my grandma, I would have left him nothing. I would have written him out of the will. He troubled her. I was a personal witness to it. He deserves nothing. And in fact, parents should feel guilty about leaving such a child in their will because to do so is to reward, enable, and perpetuate bad behavior. You're not doing your children or anybody else any favors by leaving them in the will when they are displaying behavior like I've talked about tonight. Now let's get to the second half of that proverb. And the fool shall be servant to the wise of heart. This is going to be a lot shorter than the first half. Let me define the terms here. A fool is one deficient in judgment or sense, one who acts or behaves stupidly, a silly person, a simpleton, in biblical use applied to vicious or impious persons. A servant is a personal or a domestic attendant, one whose duty is to wait upon his master or mistress or do certain work in his or her household. In a wider sense, it's one who is under obligation to render certain services to and to obey the orders of a person or a body of persons, especially in return for wages or salary. A wise person, a person that's wise of heart, is a man, a person that is having or exercising sound judgment or discernment, capable of judging truly concerning what is right or fitting, and disposed to act accordingly, having the ability to perceive and adopt the best means to accomplish an end, characterized by good sense and prudence, opposed to foolish. And the heart, so a person that's wise of heart, the heart refers to the seat of the feeling or understanding or thought. It's equal to the mind in the widest sense. It includes the functions of feeling, volition, and intellect. It is the seat of one's inmost thoughts and secret feelings, one's inmost being, the depths of the soul, the spirit. So in other words, a man who is deficient in judgment or sense and acts and behaves stupidly or wickedly, especially towards his own family, deserves to be working for and obeying the orders of his wise brother who exercises sound judgment and good sense and does what is right rather than being a co-heir with him in the family's estate. In other words, instead of getting an inheritance, a foolish brother deserves to be servant to the wise brother who gets the inheritance. That's what he deserves. Now, this proverb here is connected with the word and. He that troubleth his own house shall inherit the wind. And the fool should be servant to the wise of heart. And is connecting the first half and the second half. So by way of that, the word and, we see that the fool in context is he that troubleth his own house. Right? He's the fool. And the wise of heart in context is a sibling or maybe even a servant or another person who's given the inheritance that the fool would have received were he not a fool. Right? So, and it could be a servant. Could be another brother, could be somebody else. You know, when the father just says, you know what, I'm taking your inheritance and I'm giving it to somebody else. Instead of being heir of the estate, the fool who troubled his own house will end up being a servant to the heir of the estate who may have formerly been a servant. And I'll give you a verse, Proverbs 17 and verse 2. It says, a wise servant shall have rule over a son that causeth shame and shall have part of the inheritance among the brethren. And that verse just says it. Just says it straight out. That's what this is talking about here. The fool should be servant to the wise of heart. I wouldn't have any problem with that. If I had a son, if I only had one child, or if I had more than one and they were both fools, and I had somebody that helped out around the house, I'd leave him in the inheritance instead of a foolish son. A son who foolishly sells his birthright, whether literally or figuratively, should end up being servant to his brother who is wise and faithful. And I'll leave with the example of Jacob and Esau in Genesis 25. 29 through 34. Now, Esau here literally sold his birthright, but I contend that a child could figuratively sell his birthright by doing one of the 12 things that I listed off in this sermon. When you do those things, you have, in effect, sold your birthright. You don't deserve to get an inheritance anymore. You've forfeited it by sinful and foolish living. Genesis 25... 29 through 34. And Jacob sowed pottage, and Esau came from the field, and he was faint. And Esau said to Jacob, feed me, I pray thee, with that same red pottage, for I'm faint. Therefore was his name called Edom. Edom means red, so he got that name from the red pottage. And Jacob said, sell me this day thy birthright. And Esau said, behold, I am at the point of death, and what profit shall this birthright do to me? Now really, he came in from the field. Had he been hunting for a month? Or 2 weeks, or a week. I mean, come on, he'd probably been hunting for the whole day. I mean, he's really that close to death. I mean, he's got to sell his birthright. I mean, he's literally got maybe 2 or 3 more breaths left, and he's done, right? No, he's a reprobate. And Jacob said, swear to me this day, and he swore unto him, and he sold his birthright unto Jacob. Then Jacob gave Esau bread and pottage of lentils, and he did eat and drink and rose up and went his way. Thus Esau despised his birthright. I mean, think about it. The older, stronger brother comes back and says, I'm so hungry, give me some of that pottage. He's like, no, some of your birthright. Why didn't he just slap him upside the head and take the pottage? I mean, come on, like,
but he was unto death.
Apparently he was so weak he couldn't even slap him across the head. But look at what was prophesied that would happen back in verse 23. And the Lord said unto her, two nations are in thy womb, and two manner of people shall be separated from my bowels, and the one people shall be stronger than the other people, and the elder shall serve the younger. He sold his birthright and he ended up serving the younger. So I bring up this point just to say that you can figuratively sell your birthright, and we don't want to go there. So anyway, like I said, I think parents ought to consider this, and I think people that are in a position to receive an inheritance ought to consider this, because it could make a big difference in your life. And furthermore, regardless if you get an inheritance or not, you should just not do these things, because they're bad and stupid and wicked. And so even if there is no inheritance at stake, we ought to behave ourselves, because we're supposed to be Christians, right? So anyway, that takes care of Proverbs 11 and verse 29.
Just a quick note at the end of the sermon. The most important thing a believer in Jesus Christ can do is to be a member of one of God's true churches. If you're not already a member of one, go to pastorwagner.com/churches to see if there is a true church or other believers of like faith near you. That's pastorwagner.com/churches.